You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
We are coming back to Atlanta right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Where you from again?
I'm from right outside Chicago. Maybe that's a regional thing.
Oh, it's a regional commercial. Because you called it pop, and I was like,
Oh, sure. Yeah, okay. I told on myself with that one.
Only Chicago nigga would call it pop.
Detroit, too. It's a couple of us.
It's a gun reference. You know what I mean? Yeah, pop, you know what I mean? Bring the pop. Oh, shit. You thirsty? No, I ain't thirsty. I don't know.
The government growing babies. Microchips in your anus. All koala bears are racist. The ozone layer owes me money. Martians invented turkey stuff.
Welcome to another phenomenal episode of My Mama Told Me,
the podcast where we dive deep into the pockets of Black conspiracy theories.
And we finally work to prove that the S in S Curl does in fact stand for Sprite. Follow the money, follow the bubbles, people. This thing goes all the way to the top. I'm David Ford.
I'm Langston Kerman. So these niggas, as I'm understanding you correctly, They're dipping their hair in Sprite, and that's what keeps it juicy and luxurious.
I think that it is. I don't think it's Sprite as we drink it, like as we consume it. I think it's early in the Sprite process, but yes.
Yeah, I got you. It's the way that like those rubber bouncy balls start off as a liquid.
Yes.
And then they become that. You're saying that we're getting Sprite unremixed at its most.
It's like
unremixed.
Like, you know, crude oil? I think that S Curl is crude Sprite. Does that make sense?
Sprite. Yeah, no, that makes perfect sense to me. I can already tell our guest today, he has thoughts on this. So jump in. Fuck it. We'll intro you after. I need to know what you're thinking.
No, I'm just
this.
Thinking of which part of the process, because the more you get into the crude part of Sprite, I'm thinking of the fruit, right?
Right.
And I'm like, this could be possible if you stick to the natural part of it, that they could be dipping their head into.
Oh, like blueberries from coming to America.
Yeah, like the lemons and lime, right? But if you're thinking, but once you get to the fruit toast corn syrup, I'm like, damn, you know.
No, I'm saying it's right after they put the bubbles in. I think.
But I don't know when the bubbles come in. That's no, why I'm that's, thinking. Like,
that's why it's such a funny answer.
Yeah,
because niggas don't know how pop is made. So we sitting here like, do the bubbles go first? Or is that the finishing touch?
You are that. They don't want you to know. They don't want you to know, bro. It's a proprietary blend. If you knew when the bubbles went in, you could make your own S-curl.
Yeah.
That's where it goes to the top.
Yeah. They don't want you to know.
They don't want you to make your own S-curl.
I just
want to
dip. I want to dip my head in some Sprite right now.
You got to dip your head in some Sprite. If anybody's listening at home and wondering if we're encouraging you to dip your head in Sprite, you goddamn right we are. you need to be dipping head in Sprite.
You know, it's some churches that baptize niggas in Sprite. You know.
It's a sect of Christianity.
Yeah. You know how you got the people that do the snakes and the people that do the terror? It's a Sprite group of niggas too. You know what I mean?
And they pray to that Drake from the commercial whose face pops open and then closes
the
back
robot
up.
Thing. Yeah. Of all the Sprite commercials, that was top five for me.
That was a pretty good one. Obviously, who could forget the Sprite dunk? It wouldn't Godfrey, wasn't he the one that did the Sprite dunk?
What are you talking about?
Am I the only person who remembers the Sprite dunk? That was the one where he jumps in the air and he banks it on the front of the rim and falls over. And every time now, if you miss a dunk, you call it spriting because of that.
No, I don't know.
Oh no, man.
Maybe. Oh fuck, man.
Wait. Also, so if you miss a dunk, you call it spriting?
Yeah, like it's like a sprite. Yeah, hell yeah.
Wow, that's good marketing.
I missed this whole...
Yeah, they got to us, I guess. They really,
was
like...
Was this the 90s? Is this during the Keep It Real? Because I remember the Keep It Real sprites. Remember where he was like, I'm Pablo. And then the guy was like, cut, cut. And he was like, I played Hamlet at Cambridge. And it was like, Sprite, Keep It Real, or whatever.
I think those were Godfrey, too. I think Godfrey
really?
Was like a major part of Sprite ad campaigns during the late 90s, early 2000s.
Wow.
And we don't realize that nigga's 58.
Nah, that's hilarious. Man, that's probably when the money was good.
Yeah.
Oh, he was making good money.
Oh, there's so much Sprite money going around.
Yeah, you don't grow your dreads late in life unless you had Sprite money early, you know?
Yeah. You know, for us, when we were young, it was an S-curl. It was like, as soon as a motherfucker made it, he got the wavy hair all of a sudden. Mm-hmm.
The Sprite curl.
That's what we call spriting in the South. You know what I mean?
Okay. We couldn't possibly talk about Sprite any more than we already have. We have to get into your conspiracy theory today because and we didn't even fucking introduce you properly. I'm realizing we just started fucking talking, but our guest today is a hilarious goddamn comedian, so funny. You know him from all kinds of shit. 10-year-old Tom, you know him from Honey Boy. More importantly and most importantly, you know him from his brand new comedy special.
Yeah.
It's on Hulu. So fucking funny. Give it up. It's called Spiritual Nigga. Give it up for our guest, Mr. Byron Bauer. Yeah.
Man, he got a branded hoodie.
This hoodie stinks. I only got one. I wear it all the time.
I was about to say, are those mass producers?
This shit just... ain't spiritual. Don't spiritual. Yeah.
We're so happy you're here. You stank hoodie or not, you I love the special. You're great. I think you came to us with a conspiracy theory that is very, I feel like it's going to get us into a heavy conversation right away,
yeah.
Which I'm excited about. You said, my mama told me.
The United States isn't a racist country.
Yeah.
Tell me more. Don't make me lead off. Go ahead.
No, it's just coming from a place of like a different consciousness to when being able to experience America not as a thing of race, but a thing of like money. I think once you get past race, this country becomes it's like an open market, you know? I look at the beginning of this country, which started on slavery and those things, which, you know, to some is racial, but to the overall thing is really like, you know, money. It's like cargo and like livestock. So, you know, that's the basis in the beginning of my theory. You know, Wall Street and the history of America is built on the backs of livestock, which was slaves. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think race came into it later on. And I think they use race to keep us fighting amongst each other while the money is still being made.
So you're saying...
But if they're employing race, then doesn't that make it a racist country?
No, because a lot of people from different races come over and become very, very wealthy, and they just keep quiet about it.
Oh, you're saying that they're not unwilling to let all races succeed. It is just simply a decision of advantage. That, like, we took advantage of a thing, we maintain this advantage. Whoever makes it in, but it is truly a money conversation that built our wants and needs that led to everything else.
And I think some of that is still going on underneath race. I think they use race to, you know, keep us fighting amongst each other, you know. And it's really two of the poorest groups that deal with racism, you know, which are like the poor whites and the poor blacks.
Right. And maybe this is...
Well, during the pandemic, when I went to Utah, I was scared. You know what I mean? Because I thought I was going to run into all the Proud Boys and stuff. And it was just wide open.
But was that a function? And is your point to say that that was a function of your economic position in this country now? Or is that more just you don't think the racism was even available to be experienced?
I don't think it was... Out when you're in the woods, it's other stuff that's important, you know.
Bears.
Exactly. You know what I mean? So that's like, you know, and you think bears are racist?
I don't know. I don't know enough bears to decide yet.
Exactly. go to San Francisco, you'll meet some, and they ain't racist at all.
No, quite the opposite.
They all like booty hole. You know what I mean?
And techno music.
Yeah, that's true. So I think once you get into the human aspect of it, that we're not a racist country. Now, once, you know, governments and stuff get involved, then maybe. But I'm not a voter or nothing like that. I'm from a place where people carry arms and do all type of stuff, you know.
Right. So you're saying that either way, you wouldn't be leaning on sort of resolving things in a political sense, that like this is simply a person to person exchange for you.
Not yet. Spiritually, I think, well, not even spiritually, but in the contract of America, it shows where black people stand. Right. So right. And now everybody's trying to go back and change the contract. And it's been like, what? However many years it's been, 500 years or whatever. Somebody look it up and correct me. But
just about 250.
250?
I was about to say, you at least doubled it. But I like the instinct.
Yeah, so I think for me personally, I can't look at it. I can't look at race. I have to look at certain other things and other ways, which is socioeconomics, to even help my people.
Oh, I see you. Yeah, to some extent, it does feel like these calls for racial justice are a continually losing game. That it's like you're asking a bunch of people already playing a very finished game for them to suddenly like revamp. It's like when Uno came out with them rules that they were like, actually, you can't put a skip on top of a skip or whatever the fuck. And it's like,
yeah, I mean, we didn't,
yeah, Uno, but I already made my rules at home.
Yeah,
I don't give a fuck what you got going now in the rule book.
I play stacks.
That's what I'm saying. They said stacks are illegal in the Uno rules. But it's like, bro, you want me to upend my household?
Yeah. It's a version of like when New York had the rap game on Smash. Say New York hip hop is white people. And then other people want to get in. And then New York like, no, this is our shit. We started it.
Right.
We run it. You know what I mean? And then when the South got it, we got to hold on to it now. So we did it independently. Houston did it independently, these things. So I think as a culture, we got to find ways to get our hold on the game and do what was done.
Mm.
So race ain't even involved in that. It's all socioeconomics. It's buying a politician and all those other things that you see other cultures do, because a lot of cultures weren't like when they came to this motherfucker either.
Nobody started at the dirt that black people did, though. Maybe the Chinese, but right? Like, nobody came from completely underneath.
Yeah, I wouldn't even say the Chinese. Like, even their relationship to this country didn't originate at like, a physical abuse. It started at, like, exchange, and then...
Yeah.
Like,
following.
No one had a greater distance to travel, is what I'm saying. Like, economically.
Well, I mean...
Or so, even socially, right? even like via public perception and stuff like that. Like they still came in here like as people.
I agree, but that's somebody comparing themselves to others, right? But I'm like, right. we got people. We gonna travel the furthest.
I'm for that. Mm. I'm for that.
We the more gifted in the world. You know, you go around the world, they know who we are.
That's Let true. Me ask you.
But I feel like that's internal. That's not like the country. Like I feel what you're saying. I do think the country is racist. I think that to like subvert it, we need to not pay attention, like, and it should be more socioeconomic and whatnot. But I don't want to let the country off the hook for like serious transgressions.
You're not letting them off the hook, but you're moving you're moving like other cultures move. Like
right.
You're moving like how gangsters move quietly, you know. Like old school gangsters, they move quietly, you know. By the time you figure out what's going on, they got the shit on lock already.
Let me ask you this question. When you say spiritual nigga, because it does feel like this is a very spiritual argument, or at least approach to the argument that then takes you into sort of identifying the socioeconomic at the root of this. What do you mean? What exactly is the spiritual you're identifying with, connecting to that other people should be understanding in order to like make this make sense for them?
Think of a circle, right? Think of the word spiritual nigga, one after another, right? Mm-hmm. And then you draw a circle around that, right? And it's not that you're just this one thing. Think of it as a spectrum for me.
Mm-hmm.
I'm on that spectrum. Sometimes I could be spiritual. Sometimes I could be a nigga, depending on who I'm dealing with.
Like mm-hmm. a Venn diagram, right?
Yeah. And when I was doing the special, they wanted to take out the nigga part. But I'm like, I'm not full spiritual. I don't want no nigga running on me. Thinking, yeah, that I won't like, you know.
Right. This nigga, wait a minute. He's a sinner.
Yeah.
Kill him.
See, that's the problem that love had. Love should have been love nigga. That way, when he chokes somebody, they'd be like, oh, he's on this.
Yeah.
He's triggered. He's in this part. You know
right.
what I mean?
Right.
Yeah, he needs to be able to move in both worlds.
Yeah, well, that's the spiritual part because it's about transcending but still you're not left behind, right? Like I still might kill an animal to eat,
right.
You know, but one feeds another. That's why I said it's a circle. Now, when it comes to the way the world operates, and I've been fortunate enough to move around the world, it is some countries that go by beliefs versus race. But that's still a tool used to separate people. So you start to see patterns of that within the world and the people of true power who are quiet, who we might know a name, but we don't know what a Rothschild looked like. We know what they are by name. We don't know what Rockefeller looked like. These are true power.
Yeah.
You know, if you look up the top 400 people, 400 billionaires in the United States alone, the people we know, billionaires that we celebrate, ain't even on the list.
Right.
You know what
and
I mean?
That's because, so, like, how do you equate it, right? They say, like, Putin's the most rich person in the world, but it's because you don't know where all his money is, right?
Yeah, and that's how it is. It's like, it's one thing that says, like, own nothing, control everything.
Mm.
And I leave y'all with that.
Mm.
Nothing in your name, but you make decisions on it. That's where trust and holding companies and all these things come from. So the more I educate myself, and I follow guys like Ian Dunlap and Earn Your Leisure and these guys, then I give back to people and just to get them thinking, you know what I mean? So for me, and I think for us to survive, we have to get off some of that race train because we know it exists already. We like, you know, we generations into the United States. So how long are we going to lean on it versus like, you know, fight?
Yeah, I do think, and this, I guess, is what I was identifying in the spiritual nigga approach to this economic conversation.
Yeah.
Is I do think at its root, what you're arguing is that we need to shift our lens.
Yeah.
We have to change our perspective in order to access a real opportunity to grow versus one that is going to keep us in a cycle of abuse and self sort of like sabotage. To constantly asking for race to fix itself.
Well, right. We have to fix it within ourselves, right? It's a conflict within us. And once we understand that's the war, that's the spiritual nigga war, you know, once we have peace with that, then we can have peace with some other things and learn how to accept, like, this is what's going on, you know? And I kind of did that. I was like, oh, I'm in a racist country, so to speak. this is the game I play. Now, how do I survive within this if this doesn't change? Does that make sense? Like, if racism don't change, how can I get the same success that now other people that look like me have who made it through this thing, who don't necessarily get a game back to each other, you know? So, yeah, that's one thing. That's one way to look at it spiritually. Also, learning that compound interest isn't racist.
this went from very specific in a way.
You got to explain.
Compound interest isn't racist. You know what I mean?
I didn't know that it was.
That's what I'm saying.
No, I mean, I never knew that there was. I guess I never thought about it.
That's what I'm saying. You never think of how people think of these old niggas or grandma who bought a house for 60K and it's worth 200K. These aren't racist things. You know, this ain't feeling based. So when I say shift the mind, or what shrooms did for me, it allowed me to see the spectrum of the game that we're in and know that we can still live a lifestyle, the type of life we want to live, without sitting on a piece of grass with a sign. We can help each other quietly. We can give each other jobs quietly. Right?
I'll say this. This episode has a potential to be far more motivational than any episode we've come across so far.
Spiritual nigga.
I think we're going to take a break. We're going to regroup. We're going to figure this out. I feel good, but also terrified. We're going to take a second. We'll be back with more Byron Bowers and more My Mama Told Me.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Good, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the Story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, CentraTech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
Came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of Bitcoin on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we are back. Yeah, all right, we're back here with more Byron Bowers, more My Mama Told Me. We're still talking about the possibility that the United States is, in fact, not a racist country the way that it has been argued and presented for years and years and years. Would you say that this is a recent not a racist country, or was it at one point a racist country? Like, at what point did that transition happen for you in terms of our history?
Just learning the socioeconomic things that happen, like, it's a cold game, right? I learned, and I got jokes about now, that when slavery ended, that was the first time Black people were the wealthiest in this country, because all the white men went to Civil War in the South, and when they came back, they had to find jobs and had no skills. Who had all the skills? Black people. We were the cowboys. We fucked their wives. We cooked the food. We did everything. You know what I mean?
She wanna fuck with the dick.
Right? But we didn't know banking. We didn't know banking and stuff, so we didn't know what to do with our wealth. That was one of the first times in history our wealth got stolen. So realizing that, and realizing the stuff that happened after that, that give us fear to hide money under the mattress and do those things, instead of learn to, like, oh, get our own banks and do this and do that. I think that's what shifted for me. Mm. And we also had, you know, Black Wall Street and these other things. We had at least three times that our wealth has been taken from us. We had our own cities destroyed, you know, put under lakes, Central Park, all these, Tybee Island and Savannah that was given to all the slaves. Think of all the land that was given to the slaves.
But all that to me is symbolism of a racist country. The fact that all that happened without consequence.
But it happens in other countries too. Now,
I think other countries could be racist. I don't think we hold the patent on it by any means. And I also, but I agree with everything you're saying. I do think that a perspective shift is necessary. I just don't want to let, like, it does need to be acknowledged that shit is real. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, it's going to be real.
Yeah,
it's going to be real. When you stun on them niggas. when they see you walking down the street with your kids, you know what I mean? Being a good father, you know? That's the way, you know? That's how it's, you know, done on the low.
So you mentioned the other countries, and I think that this is sort of the jumping off point that I took in terms of the research. But the biggest question that came to mind when I heard the conspiracy theory you're presenting is how we're comparing racism, quote unquote, to a more international, or in relation to a more international scale, right? Which made me ask the question, are people more racist in other countries? And I found this 2013.
Are we going at the Canadians finally?
I wish I could tell you that is the case, my guy, but this 2013 two article from the Washington Post, two Swedish scientists basically use something called the World Value Survey that, like, is meant to measure global attitudes and opinions. And specifically, they honed in on one question on the survey, which they believed sort of largely indicated racial tolerance. And the question was, would you want someone of a different race as your neighbor? That was the big question they wanted to know. Could you accept a neighbor that is not of the same race? I'll pause here to let y'all ingest whatever the fuck that question is for you.
Oh yeah, I don't care.
No, that doesn't. No, I mean, I wasn't expecting you to say something different.
What do I think the global tone is?
Or rather, yeah, if you, this is the chance to start guessing. Maybe is who I you think is.
I think
is gonna
globally.
Say,
I don't know. I have a belief in people and I want for people to be good. So I think globally, I think, like, if you took the tone of everyone, I think most people are okay with it.
Wow.
I say no, but I'm from the South.
I'm a son of the Golden West, baby.
Specifically Atlanta, Georgia. If you know, that's all us. Now, that has shifted for me. Uh-oh. Right? because I'm in an Armenian neighborhood.
Right.
So now, and my girlfriend is Israeli. So now it becomes a value thing. You want neighbors with the same value system, right, as you. So it hasn't, it might have shifted culturally, but it hasn't shifted like if I was in the South. Like a lot of my neighbors still own guns. They still own small businesses. And when the shit hit the fan, which it won't, they know how to respond in a way that my niggas from the South would.
Mm. So you saying that about the Armenians or just like?
Armenians and it's a few Koreans over here too. And you know how the Koreans get down. You know what I mean? Hasan, yo. Did I say that right? Hasan, yo.
Oh, I don't know. I'm not going to be the point of reference on this.
Pyongyang, you too.
So what the survey found...
Everything we say is for entertainment purposes. Remember?
Yeah. I am in no way affiliated with North Korea.
One of the things that the data found is that based on the information of 80 countries that they surveyed, countries like the U.S., the U.K., Canada, Australia, New Zealand, and even a lot of Latin American countries, minus Venezuela and the Dominican Republic, were actually the most racially tolerant on the list.
I could believe that. I don't think other places are as much of melting pots as we are either. Europe, America, and then like I don't think most places are nearly as racially diverse. Like, bro,
I'm shocked by that Mexico. I'm shocked by Mexico. I'm telling you, like, I'm shocked. You know what I mean?
Yeah, they said the Dominican probably because of Haiti and also like the deep.
Well, they're not black.
The deep colorist shit that happens there, where they go like, I know black, and it's
but
like
that
bro.
That surprised me about Mexico. And I went to the DR. You know what I mean? I've been to the DR before, and. You know, bless everyone in DR. Bless all the Haitians, because it was a Haitian dude that really opened my eyes. Because a lot of the Haitians in the DR were not a lot of them, but the ones that I would run into in the town I was at were asked for change. And they knew I was from America. And they was like, he showed me his scars. And he was like, we get beat by the police, too. He's like, the only difference is y'all have a chance.
Mm.
Yeah.
Meaning that is just a way of life there that can never be reformatted versus us who could at least like appeal and scream out for help and maybe something gets done.
No. When I was in London, when I was in Paris shooting Irma Vip, I asked some black people, I'm like, how can you become wealthy if you don't play sports or sell drugs? And they was like, it's hard for us. Now in America, you can have one idea and it changed your life. Right? You could write a hit TV show. You could invent a super soaker. You could hit the lot. You could do numerous things that could change your family's life for generations. And other countries don't have that. You know, in Japan, they got a Koreatown.
I'm not laughing at anything specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't the Koreans hate the Japanese?
Well, so that was
slaves in Japan.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That was one of the things that the survey sort of unpacks is that some of the racial bias that comes from some of these places. For example, South Korea is weirdly very high on the list of places that express racial intolerance. But one of the reasons they pointed to it is like if you have a personal...
So they get to the dance floor.
Well, they love...
I've seen those videos.
But part of what they're saying is that those pop lockers, they have a racial intolerance to a specific group that was their enemy for so long. So it's Japanese people more than it is like, oh, we hate everybody anywhere, not, you know, living next to us kind of thing.
Right. I also want to back up 2 points to the idea that I think that in America you can get rich, but I don't think poverty is nearly as devastating anywhere else in the first world as it is in America either.
What?
I don't think that poverty, like extreme poverty, anywhere else in the developed world, I don't think it as terrible as it is in America.
Mm.
Does that make sense?
Meaning that like UK poverty is not nearly as bad as American poverty.
I don't think so, no.
Bro, I've been to Palestine.
But that's not what I'm talking about. That's not even the world that I'm talking about. I'm talking about like if we're talking about Europe specifically, like Paris and stuff like that. like Western Europe, colonial.
Like Australia. You know what I'm saying? And New Zealand and all the places that are sort of assigned.
I'm saying like, as far as wealthy countries, I think our poverty is the worst.
Yeah.
Except for like maybe China.
Bruh, in Palestine, they burn trash. They don't even have a sanitation system. They don't have any.
I believe that. And I mean, that's how it is in Sierra Leone as well. But that's not like one of the countries with wealth. You understand what I'm saying?
Yes. They're not doing that in Israel is essentially.
Well, if you're Palestinian, Palestine is Israel.
But you know what I'm saying. Look, don't make me defend Israel.
Where do you stand on the Jewish state?
This is not going to be the episode where I have to go, actually, Israel. No. I'm saying for the people that define it that way, they're not burning the trash.
But I think racism is worse in other places because we have at least a platform to speak on. We could at least go in front of the White House with signs where other countries can't do that. The Haitians can't do that. Man, when I said they had a curfew in DR and they was coming out locking Haitians up, throwing them in the back of paddy wagon at midnight, and the armed forces would walk the streets, they would cover the whole streets. Man, it was crazy. And then they see me and they are not. I've been in so many places where I'm like, oh, I'm black in America, but somewhere else I'm an American. You know what I mean? Like, I've been to Afghanistan. There's so many places I can go that my girl can't go because of this blue passport we carry around. So that's why I have the point of view that I have, because we all are privileged. We just don't know it when it comes to the world. And it's because of the pain and what we went through. Everybody's looking at that.
So one of the things that I guess it then also makes me think of is the question sort of, and they acknowledge this in the survey, the question also comes with the level of bias, right? That if I ask you how willing are you to, or how tolerant are you of having a neighbor of a different race, the question becomes biased in terms of my education and culture that might teach me to not openly be like, yeah, I don't want some Indian person living next to me. And so they said that, like, in America especially, we're more likely to lie on a survey like this and say that we're racially tolerant.
I believe that.
Even though secretly, no, I don't want whoever the fuck living next to me.
Yeah, when that music comes, when that loud bass comes after leaving the club, that's when the intolerance comes. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's that. And you're like, I don't. Maybe I don't like them. Maybe this ain't.
But I've been on the other side of that, right? Like, I've come with heavy bass music from trap shit, and then somebody come with, like, some trombones. And I'm like, nah. Or guitars, loud guitars coming down the street. I'm like, we got to do something.
Yeah, uh-oh. It's too much. I don't want to hear it.
But you know we blending because you got the Nazis saying that Kanye West was right about the Jews.
Yeah, the Nazis have done that a few times.
Yeah, this is.
They're never teaming up with the guys we like.
How does this always happen on this podcast?
Yeah, so that just shows you how, when I say, like, no matter if you where you at or what's going on, it could be in a racist situation or not. When you hungry, when you real hungry, all that shit go away. It's one of those things, and the Nazis holding up their sign is a version of that. They don't have a leader. They'll take Kanye. They'll take anybody right now. We just want to be heard. They want to be heard too.
Yeah, but their rhetoric is like very harmful. Like, you have to acknowledge that. I understand everybody wants to be heard. You know what I'm saying? But like, it's like that rhetoric is very harmful. I understand they want to be heard, but I don't think everybody.
Hey, girl.
Grandma.
Nazis was holding a sign. How you feel about that, Grandma? She wouldn't give a fuck. They used to hang people when she was young.
Right.
To her, this ain't even harmful no more. It's just
Yeah, but to get to the hanging, they probably had a sign ahead of time. They probably
started with a sign. It started with a couple. Yeah, they probably did some signs. Hands, like, hey, yeah. I don't think we really like that. And then snowballs.
Hanging at seven if you're free and interested.
Everything grows. Everything grows. At one point, Jesus was just a dude telling another dude, I'm the son of God. Like, everything scales up. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I can agree with you there. They losing that when they started to look for Kanye West or whoever.
Yeah, I mean, they're down bad for good reason.
And here's a powerful thing that goes with what I'm saying. That White Lives Matter is owned by a black person. It's trademarked.
Well, that's just good business. That's Byron.
I was about to say.
That's
I don't
Byron
think
Allen.
It started
that's Byron
that way.
Allen in the Weather Channel, baby.
Yeah, come on, baby.
But remember what I said, how you got to do it. If you want change, you got to do it from the end. We got to do it how it was done.
I don't disagree with that.
You're talking about a people whose food was so bland that they colonized the world.
That's true. The spice routes were the beginning.
That's the type of hunger we need. You know what I mean?
We need bland food hunger.
I'm tired of this shit. This casserole with no fucking spices on it. Go
tired
to India.
Dry pheasant. I need some curry.
Yeah.
Man. And so you're saying you're saying that with that, We should be pursuing similar levels of, like, tyranny? Should we be, like, tearing people's shit up and fucking, like, because that's what they had to do to get all that sweet, spicy food.
Spiritually, I'm saying that life's a circle. And, you know, everything starts with good intentions and then it goes wayward. Mm. Right? So even as we heal as a group of people, which I think we should do first, internally heal, then we could probably get on one accord better, because we are a traumatized group of people. And once we do that, then we could go and start doing some tyranny. But the difference is we won't have black guilt.
Now we went really full circle.
Sure. And maybe, wait a minute, maybe. Part of the reason white people didn't feel anything for so long is because of a generation before them. It was the white people who were the victims of someone's tyranny and then circled back and circled back. And this is just what we have to go from with the history books in place.
It's a pyramid scheme.
It's a tyranny
scheme. Everybody has been a slave. Exactly. Everybody has been a slave throughout history. I had a joke about it. I was like, if black people did this shit, white people did, it wouldn't be no such thing as white guilt. Slavery would be a dance that we would do at the club. I'm like, we kill each other on records and sing about it. So if we conquered the whole world, you know what I mean? We would have we'll be a ball. Our music would probably be suck and white music would probably be better, but you know.
Yeah, but there'd be like a two-year period.
I'll take that hit. I'll take that
there'd
hit.
Be like a two-year period where like Young Thug could sing about being like king of the world, and that'd be pretty fucking...
Yeah.
That'd be great music for a while.
Then country music would be ours.
And by the way, they don't give a shit if their music sucks, so we would still like our music the same level.
Yeah, no.
You know why? You know why they don't care? Because they're making money off of it.
Yeah, that's who cares? I get it.
Taylor Swift did 1.5 million in a week. She's fine. She don't give a shit about none of that.
I wish I had a Taylor Swift song I knew to reference. Shake It Off. She shaked it. Damn it. No, it's late.
Yeah,
it's
she late. Did shake it off. That's late. It's late. That's it's Taylor late. Swift.
You don't have to do that to me. You don't have to do that to me.
Yeah. Keep believing in yourself.
I know. I'm trying. I, you know, it's just, you got to go to the gym every day. You shoot shots every day.
Who hasn't heard names like Achilles or Odysseus, Cassandra, Medusa? But how much do you know about them from the ancient world? Let's Talk About Myths, Baby is the podcast bringing the ancient sources to life. Greek myth and history is timeless, and unless you've been living under a rock, you have seen just how true that is today. But there is so much more to these characters and stories than what pop culture can do justice. I'm Liv Albert, the host of Let's Talk About Myths, Baby, and every week I bring you stories from the ancient world, both mythological and historical, to breathe new life into these thousands of years old stories. I'm also regularly joined by some of the most brilliant names in the field of archaeology and ancient history, authors of your favorite retellings from today, and everyone in between. Join me as I dive into the wild world of the ancient Greeks and their stories. Listen to Let's Talk About Myths, Baby on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
My name is Johnny B. Goode, and I'm the host of the new podcast, Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. Over this 9-part series, I'll explore the life and crimes of my best friend, Ray Trapani.
I always wanted to be a criminal.
If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
You see, Ray has this unique ability to find loopholes and exploit them.
They collected $30 million. There were headlines about it.
His company, Centratech, was one of the hottest crypto startups in 2017. It was going to change the world, until it didn't.
I came into my office, opened my email, and the subject heading was FBI request.
It was only a matter of time before the truth came out.
You can only fake it till you make it for so long before they find out that your Harvard degree is not so crimson.
How could you sit there and do something that you know will objectively cause more harm in the world?
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
One of the final things that I sort of wanted to ask myself inside of this is this question of like hate crimes, right? If we're a way of measuring, I guess, racial intolerance, in my opinion, you could point directly to like hate crimes. And in 2020, out of the 10,800 people who reported hate crimes in the United States, nearly 62% of those were race-based hate crimes. 62% of 10,800. So you're about 6,700 or so, that I think is the correct number.
Okay.
But when you break that down in terms of the actual population of America, it is 0.0002606.4% of the population that's experiencing hate crimes, which is almost a negligible number. Thus, maybe leaning towards the argument that at least was being presented that this is not, in fact, a racist. And this feels very Cooney defending with numbers and shit. But it is, in fact, not, quote unquote, a racist country.
I mean, I think there's all kinds of complications to that. Would you report it? Like, I don't know if most of them are reported. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Of that 62%. You're acting like that 62% was white on black crime, which already, like, you know what I mean?
Well, let me be clear. I'm not picking a side in this. I don't want you to, because you're like,
about
you're acting
Israel.
Like, yeah. And I'm merely reporting off of the things I read on Google.
He read it. You saw him read it. Now, when it comes, I'm like him. When it comes to hate, we don't know if it's a thing of like, oh, I hate, you know, this group of people, or I hate people that hit the brakes on the freeway for no reason.
Mm.
You know, I'm from Atlanta. They get shot too.
So you're saying you might shoot an early breaker and then they go, man, that was racist. And you're like, no. It's more specific to.
I hate the content of your character.
Yeah, this ain't got nothing to do with race. This got more to be, as a spiritual nigga, this got were being present. This motherfucker was texting on the phone, and I'm trying to get to where I got to go. So,
right. I think that the obvious also misstep, and maybe this is what you were going to, Bori, is like at its core, hate crimes are not the essence of what racism is most effective at.
I think that's like the most extreme outlet.
Education, like prison.
Redlining.
Yeah, all that
all
shit.
All types of things are like, I don't think the majority of people who are even self-described racists would ever commit a hate crime within their lifetime.
Sure.
You know what I'm saying? It's, such like it's such a small group to judge what the overall problem is.
But they might vote to keep your water infested with fucking worms or whatever the fuck is happening elsewhere. So it's like, yeah, that.
Do a study on how many of them followed me in the grocery store. Not the grocery store. I look like I could afford groceries. But any place that sells clothing.
But, you know, I met somebody who uncles owns the water supply.
What? Yeah. You can do that? You can own the water supply?
Go back and listen from the beginning of the thing, right? If the difference, one of the difference between us and a group of people who some people for entertainment purposes so claim owns everything, which are Jewish people.
I was waiting to see if you were going to say it or if you were just going to play it safe.
Man. I felt bad when I said it, honestly.
Some
was like, whoops. But it's so claimed. We're not saying this is true or not, but some people say that a group of people owns everything, right? And mm-hmm. I'm like, my mentality, like, well, if somebody tried to kill my whole race, then I would want or we should try to own the water if we think we're being poisoned, the medical thing, if we think that we're being poisoned, the air, we should try to get control of everything.
Mm-hmm. Right. No, I agree with that.
Then you ain't in a position to be like, deal with the redlining and stuff like that no more. Because we were redlining ourselves, like we do in ATL. Ain't that right, Atlanta? Nah, just playing. But that's a whole nother thing. That's a whole nother thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do think to some extent what you're speaking to is more like an act of fear that leads to protection, right? That like if you terrorize a group of people, they have to figure out a way to effectively survive. And that effective survival might come in the form of, you know, making a music that allows you to survive, learning a skill that allows you to survive, or building relationships that allow you to survive. And if you happen to flourish inside of that, that's not you being some sort of criminal mastermind. That's just you doing exactly what was necessary for your survival.
Yeah, but we still a subservient group of people because we was handed this religion. So
meaning black people being handed Christianity.
Christianity, yeah. So we still are subservient to God and, you know, to figures who we might perceive God look like. And we ask God for things versus meeting God halfway. Nobody ever, you never hear a nigga say, hey, God, can you bless me with a car? I'm going to get half the money.
Mm.
But once you start thinking like that, he will meet you halfway. But the lessons that you need to learn to get half the money are being gone, you know?
I mean, this is a whole other... We're talking about the existence of God or not. I have a whole other podcast worth of feelings about this.
Well, if you don't, that's even better.
I think so.
If you don't, it's better because it makes you hustle even more because now you got to buy the whole car yourself.
Yep.
But let me tell you something. Most street niggas believe in God because... You need protection.
I have very specific reasons I don't believe in God. It's not like it's definitely not like an ingrained thing. It's like a bitterness situation.
That's a good place to be in, though.
Yeah, it makes you work hard,
and it makes you will one day find other beauties that might one day make you be like, it is something out there, whether it's an alien or whatever. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We're constant search. It's a constant search.
Yeah. So that's the beauty of it because it puts you on a journey versus somebody who's like, all right, I'm all right right here. I'm all right in my hood. With my,
right. I know what Jesus, the world is. Yeah, yeah.
And my white Jesus peace. And I'm going to stay right here. You know what I mean?
But at its core, that argument is, for example, at the root of communism, right? That like communism, I think they call religion the opioid of the masses, because they're essentially saying that like it's just cooked in to keep you in a position of subservience rather than sort of like figuring out a way for everybody to benefit as like a larger community. That like it forces a hierarchy to have a religion as like your leading decision maker for your life.
Yeah, but I mean, you still should like meditate and have a direct connection versus listening to, you know, somebody like that who might send your kids to war.
Right. And I think to be clear.
And tell them it's a training exercise.
I don't think they're saying you can't be spiritual. I think they're saying you probably shouldn't like bow to Jesus just because like your country told you to. Like that's where that becomes complicated.
Yeah, I think so. I agree. Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah.
Are you saying you're a communist, Langston? On this recording?
I'm not smart enough to make that choice.
I didn't see you read that though. I didn't see you read that. That came exactly. From college. I didn't have that knowledge.
That came from my heart.
I didn't have that knowledge. Universe never told me nothing about communism. You know what I mean?
That came from my heart and the bottom of my gooch. That was all the parts that mattered to me. No, I think
it got quiet when he was talking about communism. It was like
I think I'm merely suggesting that what you're saying about religion being part of our sort of like captivity is also cooked into what other economic systems would push for in terms of fixing things, that by removing religion, we are liberating ourselves of at least one version of our shackles.
Well, I say, just like with anything else, we need to change the dialogue. Not saying that you shouldn't have the discipline of this one thing, but you know, you got to watch who's telling the story, right? That's one thing I look at America, like they say America's the father, or the president's the father of the country. So I'm looking at them and whatever they do, I'm like, this is what we doing. So if the preacher out here, you know, preaching on Sunday and fucking on Monday, then that's just what we doing.
All right. Well, I pray that Joe Biden is fucking on a Sunday and preaching on a Monday. I pray that he has that. To lead us with, because that sounds pretty cool.
Wait, you said fucking on Sunday and preaching on Monday?
Yeah, I'll be flipping.
Whoa,
I'll be,
okay.
I'll be dirty dogging it like the devil wants him to.
That's hilarious. I thought the devil would want you to cut, but not want you to go raw dog.
No, the devil's like, man, go crazy. I want you to feel it before you burn.
I thought more God wants you to like feel it and bust nuts and recreate, and the devil more like eat the booty hole.
Oh, flip it over.
I see.
This one meant for this. God didn't create this for this, and he like, fuck it. I'm better than God.
I don't think the devil wants you to stay in one position for too long.
Ladies, I really don't eat booty hole like that. Ladies, I really don't. I'm more of
he calls it the devil hole. You heard it.
Yeah, it's the devil hole.
Well, think about the circle. We got both in us. We got God and the devil.
And you have been talking about the circle the whole time, and it's not unlike a booty hole. I see the connection you really built.
That's
here.
What? I'm taking you on shrooms without you actually doing it. The circle is very important.
Well, fellas, I think we did it. I think we nailed it. I think we nailed whatever this possibly could have been. This is beautiful. I think ending on booty hole conversation is the most accurate way that we could have done this. Byron, could you tell the people where they can find you and what cool shit you have going on?
I'm on Instagram at Byron Bowles. So just Google my name, Byron Bowles. Check out the special Spiritual Nigga. That's how you say it. If you're black, if you're white, you got to whisper it at the water cooler. If you the Nazis say Spiritual Nigger. I was just playing. The Nazis don't really watch it at all. But if you do, write me and let me know your thoughts. And yeah, man, just watch all my shit. I'm on every platform. I'll be on Apple next year.
Hell yeah. Watch Byron's shit. So funny. And Bori, could you tell the people where they can find you?
Cool Guy Jokes 87 on Instagram. All this stuff is there. Come see me December 3rd in Seattle. Come see me December 4th in Portland. Come see me November 18th at Faded Denver with Stephen AJ, who you heard on this podcast, also talking crazy. That's great.
And as always, you can follow me at Langston Kerman. I'd love to hear from you. I ain't got nothing going on at the moment. I'm just chilling. You know, sometimes you just got to stare off in the distance and reflect.
Yes,
and that's
sir.
What Papa's doing right now.
Yes,
so
sir.
Just follow me to see what I'm reflecting on. And as always, if you want to send us your own conspiracy theories, your own arguments, your own drops, we need drops. We would love to get some more wild ass drops from you. Please send them to mymamapod@gmail.com. Otherwise, that's it. Bye, bitch.
Coming back to Atlanta. Right now. Whoa. Mark your calendars because the second annual Black Effect Podcast Festival is happening on Saturday, April 27th. Hosted by B-Dot and Pretty V. Last year was nuts, but we about to do it bigger and better. We've got some of your favorite podcasts like Carefully Reckless, Horrible Decision, $1 million Worth of Game, just to name a few. Tickets go on sale today, right now. Go to blackeffect.com/podcastfestival. Get them. We'll see you there.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in LA, and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart for a year, and what a year it has been. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Make Woke AF Daily your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.